Hello.
Hello. But everyone wouldn't understand. I almost wanted to do the private joke of, hey, maybe I'll do that as a post-log here. So welcome to the show. John's going to share with us how to become a beer snob for those of you foodies or wine snobs or lack of. So, you were telling me earlier about when you go to a restaurant, you have to let the server go through their list about.
That's right. They have to get past the Bud and Bud Light and Miller Light, and hopefully they saved a tap for something worth drinking. I drink Starbucks. I'm a coffee snob, and I drink good beer, so I'm a beer snob. So, life is short.
Right.
Don't waste your time with something bad.
So, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about what you really do when it comes to you enjoying homebrew. So, to tell us, do it. And
I've been homebrewing for about 30 years.
Really? Wow. 30?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that long. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I had reached a point when I first got married where I was getting kind of tired of drinking Miller Lite. And, I think I must have gotten resistant because the only thing I got from it was a headache. So I was actually ready to stop buying it. You know, I'd go to the grocery store and buy a six pack. I was ready to stop buying it. And in my early 20s, I had found out that you can make your own beer, and I tasted a guy's beer, which was fascinating at the time because it actually tastes like beer. Which was shocking to me because that wasn't very common back then. And so, so my wife and I had just gotten married and moved to Seattle, Washington.
Wow. Yeah. Between and Seattle and Portland, there's your epicenter.
What I didn't realize was I was moving to the Mecca of, microbrewed beer.
Exactly.
And, Michigan was still in its infancy at the time.
Yeah.
So she found a class at the University of Washington that was an 8-hour how to make beer class. So I was all over that because she knew that I had mentioned that to her that I was interested. And lo and behold, there's even homebrew stores where you can buy the supplies for it.
So what do you pick up at a homebrew store to make yourself? What are they going to have on the shelf?
Part of the fun of making homebrew is the next batch, you can always one up the last one, whether it's, you know, a better recipe or more ingredients you've never used before, or more equipment. So when you first start out,
it's like buying tools, need another tool.
That's right. It's kind of a food and the food science, cooking and chemistry all rolled together with maybe some plumbing mixed in. And it's really a lot of fun.
Do you cook a lot, by the way? Can I ask? Do you cook?
Not really.
No? All right. Okay. So I've
kind of settled into dishes and laundry and Anne does the cooking and the groceries. I can do any of them, but
got it.
That's the way it's worked out.
I was just checking for fine with us.
But what's fun about homebrewing, and I was thinking about this today, you know, you can try to pick up guitar or you can or play music or you know, I played piano for quite a while. Yeah. But right when you first start out, you're just not good enough to share with other people, and your very first batch of homebrew is good enough to share with other people. So it's maybe that's part of the draw, is that unless you're really careless about how you make beer, it's hard to make a bad batch.
Okay.
But
in whose eyes?
I have had a few failures, and you learn from those. But I can only think of a few that have turned out really bad.
Okay. All right. So, how did you know it was bad? What was it that fundamentally?
Well. When you open the bottle and the thing, half the beer foams out of it.
Okay.
and the rest kind of has this strong sort of astringent alcohol flavor, then that means you didn't clean your bottles good enough. So,
okay.
The other time was, Scott Burgeon always likes to remind me of is, I read in Charlie Papazian's book, the Complete Joy of Homebrewing, which is kind of the Bible.
Okay.
That you could go out to a spruce tree and pick a fresh new growth, you know, young sprout of spruce and throw it in your boil and you get a nice little pine flavor.
Oh, cool. All right.
And they didn't have that at the time of year I was wanting to try it. So I bought this extract at the homebrew store called Essence of Spruce. I think I still have it in my cupboard down in the brewing equipment. And it's so easy to overdo it. And that's what I did. And so Scott reminds me that, as long as my beer doesn't taste like pine saw, he'll try it.
For those of you listening, Scott Burgeon, a common college buddy of ours. So he is never short of straight talk and sounds like he gave John a few tips.
But so the beginner can start out with what I like to call just add water recipe. You can boil in a little, 4 gallon, 3.5 gallon spaghetti pot on your stove and you add cold water to it and put it in your, you have to have a bucket or a glass carboy to ferment in.
Okay.
And a little air lock. You could probably for not much over $100, you can get a starter kit at the homebrew store and let that ferment for a couple of weeks. And then you put it in a bottle and add a tiny bit of measured amount of sugar. And you bottle it and you can get a capper and some blank caps. And 2 weeks later, you have beer in the bottle. It's carbonated. You pop the top off and it fizzes. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So say from 9 o'clock on day one, when you start the process, when are we popping tops and drinking finished product?
Well, I eventually got into kegging. So it's sort of a lot better. It is an investment in some equipment. You have to have a regulator and a CO2 bottle, but kegs are much easier. Once it's done fermenting, you put it in a sanitized keg and you let it sit for a week. But so if I brew on like a Saturday, probably a week later, the fermentation is pretty much done. Maybe a week and a half.
Okay.
The yeasts these days are, they come in these huge packs. When I first started out, I was using powdered yeast and you had to like put it in a cup of warm water and kind of wait for some action to happen.
Right.
And then you put it in and it wasn't very efficient because powdered yeast, half of it died during the dehydration process.
All right.
Nowadays it's all liquid yeast. There's an amazing variety of strains you can buy and they come in these huge pitchable packs. You used to have to buy a small pack of them, like a little tiny envelope of them and make a starter kit and make a yeast starter batch and ferment it in a little bottle.
Huh.
That got old like the very first time I did
it. You're not only trying to make beer, you're now trying to make yeast properly.
Yeah. I just want to make beer. One day for me is the right amount of time to spend on it besides, babysitting it after that.
But, so what's the yeast really doing for our beer enjoyment overall?
Well, the basic chemical reaction, it's a biological process actually, not really a reaction, is yeast, which is a living organism, consumes sugar and gives off CO2 gas and alcohol.
Okay.
So the sugar in beer comes mostly from barley grains. The sugar from wine, most of it comes from grapes.
Okay.
And throughout the centuries of making fermented beverages, people have cultivated these strains that work best for beer or work best for wine.
Got it.
And there are strains for each like historic country of beer. There's British strains, there's German strains of yeast, and others.
So the yeast kind of represents the region in a lot of ways too, right?
Well,
based on the
there's three main participants in the flavor of a beer.
Okay.
One of them is the most obvious to people, which is the grains you use. And you can use grains that have been over-fired, like kilned, like burnt toast, to get a dark beer, or you can have ones that are more like caramelized into a hard piece of candy to make a sweeter beer.
Okay.
The second is, of course, the hops, which is the it balances the sugary sweetness of the malt with its bitterness, and it also adds preservatives so that your beer will keep longer.
Okay, all right.
And that's two, and then the third one is actually the yeast strain itself. It's a lot of homebrewers overlook it for a long time when they're first starting out, but actually, different strains of yeast can give you a dramatically different beer flavor.
It's yeast, hops, and grains. Those are three players.
Right. And so when a brewer is making beer, they have to, you take a barley grain that's been malted through a process called malting. And that happens in a big warehouse where they just cover the whole floor with grains of barley, and they kind of get it wet, and they actually convince it to start almost sprouting. And right before each grain sprouts, they take the whole batch and they heat it in an oven to stop the living. So it basically kills the grain.
Yep. Yep.
And what that does is build up a bunch of starch in the kernel that you want to turn into sugar.
Got it.
So my wife is the biologist, and she corrects me all the time, but she's not here, so I can say whatever I want. Starch is a very long chain of molecules, and as it gets chopped up into smaller and smaller pieces, it becomes sweet to the palate instead of like, so it turns like from flour to sugar, basically.
Okay.
For a simplistic view. Yeah. And if you chop them up really finely by mashing the grains too long, then you'll get a very, what's called a dry beer, which is highly fermentable sugar. All of it ferments. You get no sweetness left. But if you mash at a higher temperature, or you add grains that have very long sugar chains like caramel malt, it will, those are not fermentable sugar, so the yeast will try, but they can't consume that long sugar chain. So they stay behind in the beer, and you get some sweetness to it.
Okay. So from, so you've been doing this 30 years. What's your favorite batch or flavor that you've ever made?
Actually, I like a very sweet IPA.
Really? IPA?
And IPA is my go-to style. Like, I like to buy grocery store, you know, microbrewed beer, because you can go to Kroger's and get something made, you know, in Grand Rapids and even closer in Detroit. So my go-to beer, I always go back to the IPAs. If I go to a brew pub somewhere and I'm trying their homemade house beer for the first time.
Yeah.
I always got to try their IPA.
The IPA, okay, all right.
But I love other kinds of beers as well.
I like to have
a nice dark beer.
The stouts and porters. Those are, I don't know why, they're heavier, but they just, it's almost like the lighter beers for me.
Yeah.
They're tasteless, kind of like you said at the beginning of our discussion.
Right.
It's like, I can't really appreciate it. So it's just not real
full. There's no flavor in them. And you know, you're a regular beer drinker, so the alcohol doesn't affect you much if you have a couple of them.
Right.
You have to drink a lot of them.
Right.
By their design. So what's the point of having a blonde, a lager? And if you've ever poured like a Miller Lite and even held it up to like a German lager, imported German lager, the German lager is going to be dark, even darker yellow, and have more flavor. It was intended to have more flavor. It's the American brewers that thinned out the flavor down to 3.5% alcohol or whatever it is. because they want you to drink a lot of it. And right. that's it's the sort of game. That's their business model right. that they've come up with.
Yeah. Interesting. But, yeah. Yeah. It's not quantity. It's quality.
So my, like I told you before, one of my favorite things to do is get more equipment.
Yes.
And the first big step is going to what's called a partial mash, where rather than just buying the pre-mashed syrup, like the just add water recipe,
yeah,
you actually start adding a bag of grains in that when you're heating it up on the stove. And eventually what you do is you go to a full mash where you have to be able to rinse the grains out, and a full wort boil, which is like you start out with about 8 gallons and or 7 gallons and you boil down to 5. Then you've got this hot liquid that you have to cool down quickly because otherwise you'll start getting off flavors in it. So it's a little bit stressful when you first do that as a brewer. And what I've done for a long time is put a copper coil in there and you run cold water through it and it kind of cools it down. It takes about 40 minutes. Faster than that is even better.
Okay.
And I've had my eye on these
more equipment
radiator style coolers, you know, like heat dissipators, sort of like a miniature radiator of a car. And you run the cold water through one direction and the hot beer through another. And as fast as you can run it through there, it cools it down to like 68 degrees Fahrenheit, which is perfect.
You're doing all this in your basement?
Well, in order to boil, you know, 8 or 10 gallons of liquid, you have to use a propane burner. It's just too much for a stove. You'll be there
right,
forever.
Right.
And of course, propane is an outdoor sport.
Yep.
So
please be safe, kids.
It's gotta be in my garage. The best brewing day is going out under our patio awning and in the warm summer sun. And
okay.
You can stand out of the sun, but you're outside like boiling your beer. That's the best.
Right.
And of course you
outside.
Have to drink beer when you make beer. That's a rule. So the batch gets, you know, more enjoyable as you go throughout the day. But
I found a website that brewlosophy.com, and their tagline is "Those who drink beer think beer."
Yeah.
So of course you gotta drink beer while you're brewing beer.
So for $100 and some, I just bought one of those like a little radiator style. I think it's, well, it's right here on the counter.
Yeah, so John has acquired more tools for the beer snobbery.
Blackman Therminator. That's a plug for them. I haven't used it yet, so I tried it out with hot water only, and it actually works too well. Like it came out too cold, so I'll have to be careful on brew day. So I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited too. The other piece of equipment that I bought was there's a homebrew store in Ann Arbor and in Taylor called Adventures in Homebrewing. And I
went to be mistaken with the 80s movie Adventures in Babysitting.
I went to, in fact, he got the website homebrewing.org. I don't know how he did it. He must have applied for it early enough.
Early.
But he owns that URL. Anyway, they're a super good homebrew store. There's probably others, but that's the one I recommend.
Okay.
Right. And I was in his shop when he used to be on Ford Road. He was just a little hole in the wall shop.
And for those of you listening, just hold on. John and I are in the Detroit, Michigan metro area. So some of our references are referring to Southeast Michigan in terms of where we live and buy things. So sorry, John.
But there's plenty of homebrew stores wherever you live. And mail order homebrew is a huge booming business. And it's really convenient to just pull out your phone, look at what, you know, order what you need off your phone, and it comes in a couple of days. It doesn't really matter where
it's all the ingredients you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. It's kind of like Blue Apron.
And they are custom made. their available stock of equipment and supplies are custom made for brewers. Like, if you can dream it up, someone's probably thought of it and they're selling it as a component in the homebrew store. So
you're kind of building your menu of your batch, if you will.
That's right.
All right.
My equipment list. And so I bought, this guy's three-tiered brewing system. He just had it like ground sanded off because it was all rusty. He had it like sandblasted and nickel plated. And I bought it from him, and it had has three burners on it, three propane burners, and three levels. So you have an upper level in the center of this cage-like structure, and then you have two fold-out cantilevered plate areas where there's the next level down is halfway down the thing, and then the lowest one. The reason that it has three tiers is when you go through the brewing of beer, you transfer the liquid using gravity. So that's like the next step up is a three-tiered brewing system. And I've had that for a long time, and it's taken a lot of space in our garage. And my wife complains about it all the time. And I just sold that the other day I don't know how – I'd have to calculate how many years I had that, but I sold it for pretty cheap too. All right. I just wanted to get rid of it because we cleaned our garage and we were like, you know what, this thing is
– right.
Overstayed its welcome. So I went and spent, but you got to spend money to get rid of stuff. So I bought something called a Kegel, which is a full-sized commercial beer keg where they cut the top off. I think it's 10 gallons.
A commercial beer what? Keg?
A steel keg.
Got it. Okay.
And you use it as a big kettle to boil in. So it's called a Kegel.
Got it. Kettle.
And bag. And I bought a pump, which was, you know, a couple hundred bucks. That's why people don't buy pumps. So it's an expensive hobby if you start buying all, unless you have a lot of money at. So I bought this pump, and it basically recirculates the liquid back into this thing when it has a false bottom on it. So while you're mashing, you're kind of homogenizing the mash, and I used to just put it in like a picnic cooler and let it sit for a long time, for an hour, and then it converts the starches to sugars. But now it does it with an active circulating liquid, which is sort of the more modern, the new and modern way to do it. And then when you're done, and it's big enough that you don't have to have that upper level of hot liquor, hot water, to gravity feed into the next level. You just put it all in, you know, and some brewers may shudder at that, but I'm a home brewer, and this thing takes up much less space. So I've gotten used to that. And I just bought a single propane burner on a little stand, and that like almost folds up. It's much smaller. So then the recent purchase was that Therminator cooler. So now I've got lots of expensive equipment.
It's all because you got rid of some other tall junk and had to offset it with some other high end.
You know, that's good justification. You get your wife tired of all your equipment sitting around, and you say, well, you know, if you want to save space and take up less space, I just need to go spend a little bit more money, and I can get the stuff that, you know, is more compact.
Does Anne drink any of your?
No, she's not.
She doesn't like beer. All right.
She said it just reminds her of a fraternity house.
So. Yeah. It should be a pleasant experience. You know, do it in moderation.
You can come across an amazing flavored beer that you've never had before in all the years that you've been an adult drinker, and I don't even ask her to taste it anymore. Right. Sometimes I'll ask her to smell because it smells so good.
Right. That's so funny.
With hops, you can get fresh flower smells and stuff.
Yeah.
Aromas out of it.
Yeah. You know, it's like coffee. A lot of people I know do not like coffee, but they really like the
smell of it. Smell,
the caramel, salted caramel lattes or whatever, but it'll never pass their lips.
So one of the fun things to do when you're homebrewing is you go into the store to get your grain bill, and you plan your recipe ahead of time, and they have the little scales and you weigh out, and they got these little scoops, and you're getting bulk grain right out of these huge bins.
It's like Little House on the Prairie. We're going to the village store.
A couple scoops of sugar, yeah. So the fun thing is that you get to like chew each grain, take a sample and chew it, and see what the flavor is as you're getting the recipe together. It's just,
all right.
It's part of the experience.
It gives you a preview.
Right.
Interesting. Tell us about your beer glass collection. I know I've contributed to one or two of them, but you've got them organized. By the way, John's an engineer, if you haven't detected the precision and the cool geekiness of doing this hobby. But so let's talk about some of the accessories that you've collected over the years.
Well, I like to go to a place that makes their own beer and try it and then buy their logo glass. And
okay.
Most people have a pint logo glass. I have one actually that it ends up being my favorite one. That's not a pint glass. It's like a brandy snifter style, more of a,
a little bit of the goblet type of shape.
Yeah. It's more of a really delicate, like wine glass goblet. That's Brewery Vivant. They make, what kind of beer is that again? Sort of sour beers.
Okay.
They sort of make their own sour, like IPA, sour IPA.
To a non-beer person, sour beer has got to be the most gross thing that they've ever heard.
Some people really love that style. I'm willing to have one, but I'm not a big fan of it. I've collected logo glasses, and it got to be too much for the cupboard in the basement where my brewing center is. You couldn't really see it because we got some old surplus cabinets from a lab in down at U of M in Ann Arbor, and they've been inside that cupboard, and I filled it up. There was no room, so I ordered a glass display cabinet online. That's like people would get it to put their knickknacks on. It's got a mirror in the back and it's lighted. It's got sliding glass doors that lock, you know, so you could put like. If it was a store display, you could put expensive items on display.
Got it.
People have to come to you to get it out. So it's got one, two, it's got six shelves. And I've got five of them plus two glasses.
Hold on. You have five of these display cabinets?
Five shelves filled up with glasses.
Five shelves. Okay. So how many display cabinets?
You have just one.
Just one?
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I thought you'd have more than one. All right.
And I sort of arranged them loosely by like where they're located. Cause
here comes more engineering stuff, folks. Here we go.
I don't arrange my shirts in my closet by sleeve length like some people do. But
anyway,
the top row is almost entirely Dead Soldiers. There are brew pubs that went out of business, like Hair of the Frog. in Grand Rapids, okay. Bonfire Bistro in Northville, Copper Canyon.
Yep, in Southfield.
But it's really nice to go down there and turn the light on and just enjoy the collection. It's, you know, if you ever watch American Pickers, people collect all kinds of things, and once you start, it's sort of it becomes an obsession.
Yep. Yep.
So aside from a few glasses that people have given me, I've pretty much gone to each of these places. So
okay.
A lot. Right. There's one from Savannah where my son's going to art school. There's some from out west when we drove to Yellowstone Park, and I have one from Cambridge Brewing Company at MIT because I was there on a business trip.
Awesome.
Their logo is really cool because you know when you get coffee rings or drink rings on the counter.
Yes.
Well, imagine having like two or three of those nearby each other, and each one's a slightly different, like orange or rust colored. And that's their logo.
Got
Cambridge
it.
Brewing Company.
That's so great.
It's kind of a special one. One of them is actually ground into the glass. The Old Boys brewery in Spring Lake, Michigan.
Okay.
All the way on the West Coast. Yeah. They actually ground their logo into the glass.
I like that.
That's kind of cool.
I saw a program where there's a supplier that focuses on supplying most of the brewers all their tap handles and just the art, and people will collect tap handles alone, you know, whether they're
That would be cool. I better not do that, or else
you're gonna need a whole new display. You're gonna need a double basement.
I do have two tap handles that are just the black store-bought ones. I need to find somebody who can make me a couple of really cool
ones. So I wanted to ask you about that. So if you were to have your own brand of beer, what do you think the logo would represent? Or have you thought about that?
I've thought a little bit about it in the 30 years. I do have a dream to open a brew pub, but I just need a partner who's willing to run the restaurant part.
There you go, folks.
You have to have food.
Yes. Yep.
If you don't have food, then you're going to lose half your customer client tell, but one of my favorite brews besides IPA is porter.
Okay.
And I actually have managed to talk to the brewer down at Grizzly Peak Brewing in Ann Arbor. And he gave me the recipe on the back of a napkin, literally on the back of a napkin.
I love it.
I told him I was a home brewer and I'd been trying to make his porter and I couldn't get the flavor right, and it turned out it was the yeast. I was not using the right, because I had everything else, you know. Porter is very common recipe, common style.
Yep.
In the beer world, but it was the yeast. Trying to remember the name of it, Ringwood Ale yeast, which was, I had never used it before, the description of it just says notorious, but it doesn't say what it's notorious for. So I brewed with it for the first time, and usually right when it's done fermenting, you can kind of smell and you can taste the flat beer and you'll know whether it's going to be a really good batch or not.
Okay.
And this stuff tasted bad. And I thought, oh man, I just ruined this whole batch. Didn't smell good. It didn't taste good.
Using the back of the napkin recipe.
Using the back of the napkin recipe and the Ringwood Ale yeast.
Yeah, that sounds like a Lord of the Rings, you know, reference. Ringwood Ale yeast. Man.
But when you put that on cold storage and something happens, like the yeast drops out of suspension and what it leaves behind is like luscious chocolate cake flavor, like really sweet porter. It's so good. It has a really nice mouthfeel to it. So back to the original question, I would call that Blackbird Porter.
Okay. Right.
Because growing up in Michigan, you always hear the red winged blackbird.
Yep.
Trill.
Yep.
So that brings me back to my childhood, and so I love animals, and so that animal goes to the porter.
Okay. Yeah, love it. What if you sketched your logo? Any ideas?
Well, it would be the bird.
The bird. All right. Of course.
That's more of a beer style logo than an overall brewery. I haven't thought about an overall brewery.
Right, because
I know it would be animal based.
Yep, because every unique beer title has got its own logo. If you look at any of the craft beer brewers, they've got their own unique art tied to that that liquid in the bottle or the can. Yeah, it's the art itself. I can't imagine the number of people that are employed just to be able to do the artwork for their for their craft brew companies. Did winding down, did you brew today by chance?
No.
No.
That would be nice. Actually, when I used to brew several times a year, probably once a month at my peak.
Yeah.
And when we moved back to Michigan and started having our kids, you just basically have no time because you have to arrange like an entire day of not – you know, doing anything for the wife or kids.
Right. Don't bother me.
That's right. You have to leave me alone. I'm busy. I can't stop and talk on the phone.
Sorry, the toilet's plugged. I'm sorry, not my problem today.
So now that, you know, my oldest son is away at college, and my daughter's driving herself around with her own car, it's, I find more time. But,
giddy up.
But then it's time to take care of the my wife's parents, so it's coming. I have all the equipment, and I'm poised and ready to make much more beer. This summer should be a good summer.
I cannot wait. Being 20 minutes from you, yes, I cannot wait. That's awesome. Love it, love it. Yeah, so we got into a little bit of the science and chemistry of making it. You have your wife to thank for getting you into this whole mess, don't you?
That's right. If she wouldn't have suggested that I go take that homebrew class, who knows what would happen.
You'd have a garage full of motorcycles or something.
I would be a less rich man. And not financially.
The palate of John. Oh, awesome, awesome. John, we appreciate you being here. This is good. This is both educational and fun, just kind of hearing your slice of life about what you love doing beyond your day job.
My pleasure. Hope somebody enjoys listening to it.
Yeah, yeah. And if anyone has any questions about this, we'll be able to put you in touch with Mr. Huber, and they can get you on a little shared journey here. So you've been listening to Beyond My Day Job with Lonnie Miller and our special guest tonight, John Huber. John, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Right. Good evening.
Bye.
Bye.